Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 19th day of December, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call. And given that this was one of the most news-heavy weeks in, well, a long time, if not forever, from a sellout SCOTUS over the weekend to fraud in the Electoral College and, of course, the election fraud that preceded it and set it up to the booga-booga-booga flu and the holy jab that is guaranteed to fix it if you worship at that particular cult altar to the not only inevitability of civil war but arguably World War III to go along with it, yeah, there's a lot to talk about tonight. Oh, and hey, let's not forget, the unconstitutional Fed met this week, too, to talk about how they're going to accelerate the already in progress Greater Depression. But you already knew this was going to end in hyperinflation now, didn't you? So for crying out loud, where do we start? Sometimes, as it is this evening, the answer is with an appropriate piece or two to set the stage. Because it makes so clear what is wrong with so much of America with a K or a CCP, that wasn't the case back when we were at least closer to being a free nation. From where else? The People's Republic of New York, where Andrew Cuomo, I hate to use the term governor unless you're talking about the same sense that it was used during the time of King George III, signed an abomination called S-8928B into what passes for law there, which prohibits the state of New York from selling or displaying symbols of hate. And the bill tells us that these so-called symbols of hate shall include, but not be limited to, which is pretty much an unlimited grant of power, symbols of white supremacy. And what isn't white supremacy in post-constitutional America? Neo-Nazi ideology, unless, of course, it's Antifa or BLM, in which case it's just fine, or the battle flag of the Confederacy, ever more obviously important as we head to a similar conflagration again. The law prohibits the displaying or sale of said symbol on any state property, including fairgrounds and parks. Here's the key. No further guidelines were written into the bill, nor did they bother to lay out who would determine just what symbols the almighty state of New York deems to be hateful. What do you bet, though, that the Declaration of Independence and then the Bill of Rights will be right towards the top of that list? This thing is so broad and vague, you know darn well they're going to use it for exactly what they intended to do with it when they passed it. It's the New York Soviet state equivalent of Antifa's bike lock in a sock. The most important news of the week, though, one way or another, seems to involve hacking, whether we're talking about an election or just about everything else. And would you believe there may be a connection? Remember, though, if you can spot it, you'll almost certainly be labeled a conspiracy theorist. So with that in mind, let's start with the official Ministry of Truth narrative. The U.S. government says the WAPO spent billions on a system for detecting hacks. The Russians, Russia, 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 outsmarted it.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Ah, come on, guys. With all the real stuff that's going on, can't you find a better boogeyman finally? Here's a quick summary of the waste stream spin. First from Reuters, U.S. Homeland Security, thousands of businesses scramble after suspected Russia, Russia, Russia hack. It was at least suspected to have been directed by the Russian government. The attacks first revealed by Reuters on Sunday also hit the U.S. Departments of Treasury and Commerce, parts of the Defense Department, including secret servers, say some stories were breached, and the WAPO reports that the State Department and National Institutes of Health were hacked. Ultimately, folks, the litany of stories say that almost everything Big Brother was probably hacked, along with the great majority of the Fortune 500. But a Pentagon spokesman said that for operational security reasons, the DoD will not comment on specific mitigation measures or specify systems that may have been impacted. Before the week was over, though, it was revealed that just about everything, from the Los Alamos Nuclear Research Labs to the Department of Energy to the nation's nuclear stockpile networks, were all hacked and compromised. Now, here is the interesting eyebrow-raising stuff. We'll come back to this. Technology company SolarWinds, which was the key stepping stone used by the hackers, said up to 18,000 of its customers, including lots of Big Brother's best, had downloaded a compromised software update that allowed hackers to spy unnoticed on businesses and agencies for almost 9 months. But on Sunday night, the infamous Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. Yeah, you know, the one with the now thankfully and finally fired director Chris Krebs, who couldn't spot this hack for month after month after month after month after month after month, but still declared that the November 3 election was the, quote, most secure in American history, and now we know what that's worth. Anyway, now that he's gone and the hack has been discovered, CISA issued a rare emergency directive, 21-01, in response to the known compromising involving SolarWinds Orion products. Only the fifth time that's ever happened since the Congressional Cybersecurity Act of 2015. The criminally negligent network, in a headline that says why cybersecurity experts are worried, yes, it's the result of that worldwide hacking campaign with possible ties to Russia. Investigators, it says, are still trying to figure out just how much of the government may have been affected and how badly it may have been compromised. Only thing we know for sure, though, is the election is just fine. Don't worry your pretty little dumbed-down heads about it. What? Anyway, but what little we know, it says, a couple paragraphs down, has cybersecurity experts extremely worried, some describing the attack as a literal wake-up call, said Teresa Payton, who served as White House Chief Information Officer under President George W. Bush. I woke up in the middle of the night last night just sick to my stomach. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at a 9, and it's not because of what I know, it's because of what we still don't know. Meanwhile, though, at least 3 U.S. agencies have publicly confirmed they were compromised, and all federal agencies are on alert. MSN, for their part, says, well, after the usual possibly it's tied to the Russian government mantra, that the threat apparently came from the same cyber espionage campaign that has afflicted cybersecurity firm FireEye, as well as foreign governments and major corporations. And, oh, here we go, the cavalry is coming to the rescue. The FBI is investigating. So, yeah, folks, it's time to bleach bit all of the evidence. And if you notice a bit of sarcasm there, by now, hopefully, you know very, very well why. For example, there's this in the Reuters piece. One of the people familiar with the hacking campaign said the critical network that DHS and their cybersecurity division uses to protect infrastructure, including, no coincidence, the recent elections, no, has not been breached. And would they tell you if it had? They're aware of the reports, though, and they're not saying how badly things were affected. Among other things, Reuters continues, DHS is a massive bureaucracy that is also responsible for securing the distribution of the COVID-1984 plandemic vaccine. What could possibly go wrong? Hey, one thing's for sure, folks. Of the viruses we've been talking about, real, imagined, deadly, and ignored, while this SolarWinds virus is no doubt a big deal, it's certainly not the biggest threat either. The computer virus isn't going to be injected into your bloodstream. Well, I take that back. Not yet, anyway. All of which led your host to look a little bit deeper into the connections here and ask several questions, a couple of which I'm going to answer right up front. Like, the word election appears in almost none of these reports. You've already heard me describe the couple of places where the word actually does, and it's with the usual disclaimer. And the word Russia, 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 Russia appears over and over and over again. Oh, yes, the Russians left their fingerprints, it would seem, or at least somebody made it seem like they did. Hey, not like we've seen that before either. And there's one word that you will not find in a single one of these online waste stream pieces. Want to take a guess? Well, several. Anti-disestablishmentarianism is one, but China, Communist China in particular, or the CCP, is another. And given the Dominion and Smartmatic and election rigging and other connections that they don't want to talk about, as well as the Communist Chinese ownership connections that they don't want to talk about, maybe none of that is surprising in the least. But it's interesting how many people on the web noticed that, well, up until today or so anyway, SolarWinds was featured prominently right there on the Dominion voting machine's front page and login link. I found any number of before and after screenshots still up, at least for now. Here's one example via Zero Hedge and the Insider paper, which says that the Dominion Voting Systems website has removed the link and reference for SolarWinds from their platform. It seems that DVS is trying to hide their relationship with SolarWinds because they've been the center of controversy for the past few days since that big hack. The Dominion voting systems are being criticized, they note, for using a technology firm, that's FireEye, and there are all kinds of corporate connections here, folks, that was hacked. These voting systems, of course, are involved with voting and, it would seem, manipulation in at least 28 states, and therefore being attached to a technology firm that was hacked just isn't good for their brand name. Which customer base also happens to include all five arms of the United States military, as well as a whole bunch, 425 of the Fortune 500 companies. And this is interesting, and the latest revelations also ought to raise some really big eyebrows over this one. A number of witnesses, says the same piece, have come forward to claim that Dominion products were connected to the Internet during the recent presidential election. I mean, really, folks, if there's one thing we know by now, it's that they could care less about what the law says. If not, why is it that they have all of this secure Internet stuff, right? Raising doubts about their security mechanisms. Which takes me to a piece from Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, where the Dominion CEO, John Paulos, says, say it with me, folks, Dominion is not linked to solar winds. At least, no, not that you can prove now, anyway. Okay, well, yeah, but not the solar winds Orion product. In questioning before the Michigan State Oversight Committee, Paulos was asked if it's possible to change a record value either locally or remotely on the Dominion machines. He said that, to his knowledge, yeah, how's that for a cop-out? It's not, and if it was, you couldn't do it undetected. He said it'd leave a trail. Which may be true, and it explains why they're doing everything possible to hide that trail. And he also said that Dominion does not use the solar winds Orion package that was the subject of the most recent, highly publicized, now anyway, DHS report. Oh, and it's also not possible to use a USB drive to manipulate the data, even though their instruction manual seems to say something very different. The Gateway Pundit's coverage also includes a number of other articles that have things like this. Huge update, says one, Dominion voting systems do use solar winds, and this is the same company that CISA, in their rare public warning, reported was breached, compromised, and should be disconnected. This piece goes on to quote an IT professional who said the following, we use solar winds to manage network equipment, servers, etc. Solar winds is a very powerful tool. It has a scripting tool capable of automated task scheduling of configuration management. So, say you had 1,000 or more voting machines spread across the country. You could build scripts to download data from or upload data to them rapidly in seconds. SolarWinds services and accounts are granted elevated permissions on equipment to perform these tasks. But hackers could take over a company's SolarWinds management server to use as a zombie and orchestrate attacks on voting machines from all over, making it difficult to track. And as Hoff summarizes it, no wonder Dominion's trying to hide their connection to this latest example of an election gone horribly, horribly, and evidently as per plan, wrong. One more fairly intricate story, courtesy of Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit. It's called a breaking exclusive and says that the owners of SolarWinds have links to, I hope you're sitting down, Obama, the Clintons, China, Hong Kong, and of course, the U.S. elections process. And let me say this again, folks. Story after story from the waste stream tells us things like, this is a grave threat. The largest espionage attack in U.S. history. Even a prelude to war. But literally, you won't find the word China in any of these stories that are still trying to get you to drink the Russia, Russia, Russia Kool-Aid. Oh, no.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
The chain of acquisitions, owners, and board members is, and I would suggest this is probably deliberate, intertwined and obtuse. There's quite a bit of sleuthing involved. Links include names like Datacard, Silver Lake, Toma Bravo, Orlando Bravo, DigiCert, CyberTrust, and Entrust, closely related to a firm by the name of LiveRamp, located in Shanghai, connections to a former advisor to Bill Clinton, and even a Rose Law Firm partner. Along the way, lots of donations to Hitlery and Obama. But TGP's summary goes like this. The owners of SolarWinds are closely related to Obama and the Clintons. They're also heavily invested in the election business and have relations with companies and individuals in both China and Hong Kong. And finally, there's this from a related follow-up story, also courtesy of the same source, Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit, about that forensic report authorized by Michigan Judge Elsenheimer to attorney Matthew DiPerno. That report from Patty McMurray and the Allied Security Operations Group has been released, and it says that after forensic examination of 16 Dominion voting machines in Antrim County, Michigan, Allied Security Operations Group has concluded that the Dominion voting machines were assigned a 68.05% error rate. And as attorney DiPerno explained, when ballots are put through the machine, a whopping 68.05% error rate means that 68.05% of the ballots are sent for bulk adjudication, meaning they collect the ballots in a folder. And, quote, the ballots are sent somewhere where people in another location can change the vote, unquote. Which, unless you work for CNN, MSNBC, or it seems the Supreme Court, you might call a significant issue. So back to the other side of what your host suggests may be the same coin. As you may recall, we were supposed to have gotten a report from the Director of National Intelligence on Friday about foreign election interference from any number of potential places, including, of course, our very own deep state. Evidently, it didn't happen. But somehow, I'm inclined to lead up to all of that with this. Axios' Jonathan Swan reports, in a piece that's being picked up by places like Zero Hedge, a bombshell potential major disruption is a key part of the so-called transition before the Fuhrer-elect is not sworn in on January the 20th. The Pentagon has, without warning or explanation, halted Biden's intelligence transition briefings. I'll ask it, would you want to be briefing a Chinese spy about war plans? Given what we know, but the press won't report on, said Swan, Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller ordered a Pentagon-wide halt to cooperation with the transition of the so-called president-elect, shocking officials across the DOD, said senior administration officials to Axios. Biden's team has so far maintained that they're unaware of the directive. Well, they're unaware of a whole lot of stuff, no surprise there, while Pentagon officials are said to be stunned and in the dark. Quote, administration officials left open the possibility that cooperation would resume after a pause for the holidays, and the officials were unsure what prompted Miller's action or whether President Trump approved. Again, folks, if there's good news here, it's that you don't brief enemies of the Republic on upcoming war plans. Said Axios, Miller's move, which stunned officials throughout the Pentagon, at least the Black Hat team, was the biggest eruption yet of animus and mistrust, well-deserved, obviously, towards Team Biden from the top level of the Trump administration. Not to worry, said at least one senior DOD official, downplaying the halt. It's just a delay of a few scheduled meetings until next year. But, said Swan in a follow-up tweet, there was nothing routine about this decision, which appears to be part of an emerging information and intelligence war between the White House and the Fuhrer-elect and his crooked team. Swan in his tweet offered this further explanation, saying that senior Trump officials have been furious at the Biden team, privately blaming them for leaks. Isn't that putting it kindly? And this decision was discussed Thursday night with the White House. Again, folks, given that the bigger war has to do with communist China, unless it's for disinformation purposes, why would you brief the enemy spy infiltrating your camp? As we have reported, however, the DNI report having to do with election interference by foreign sources, which, by executive order dated September of 2018, was subject to a December 18th deadline that did not get met. Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe has said, though, that the report would come out next month and show interference by China, Iran, and Russia, according to CBS News senior investigative correspondent Catherine Herridge. The claim was that there have been reporting delays, as a number of agencies have not yet finished coordinating on the product. Others have called it sandbagging. More charitably, there are also claims that so much new information about the foreign interference has come out of late that Ratcliffe wants everything to be included before the final report is issued. Hopefully, we'll see. But it is notable that back on December 3rd, in an op-ed published by the Wall Street Journal, Ratcliffe said that the Communist Chinese Party, or CCP, quote, poses the greatest threat to America today and the greatest threat to democracy and freedom worldwide since World War II. The intelligence, he continued, is clear. Beijing intends to dominate the U.S. and the rest of the planet economically, militarily, and technologically. And many of China's major public initiatives, he said, and prominent companies offer only a layer of camouflage to the activities of the Chinese Communist Party, unquote. given that this report's coming out after 4 years of largely debunked Russia, Russia, Russia claims about their meddling in the 2016 election, because the deep state candidate that was supposed to win, folks, didn't, but arguably was the real Russia connection anyway. And the fact that there are still debates, as the Washington Examiner puts it, within the intelligence community about whether the CCP is a bigger threat than Russia, Russia, Russia or not. And here, folks, your host has to interject the following. Is it just possible that what's left of the American Republic might have more than one external communist enemy? Not only at least two foreign, but certainly some domestic as well? Jack Posobiec has confirmed that DNI John Ratcliffe is determined to make sure the report does name China's interference efforts in the election, and he is refusing to sign any document unless it contains such details. And I think it's probably obvious, folks, why the deep state and its communist influencers is equally anxious to make sure that doesn't happen. Jack Posobiec explains, given all the information that the alternative press has been reporting, and that Ratcliffe certainly has access to, the DNI report could be used by President Trump to invoke sanctions against not just China, but any person or corporation in the USA who was complicit in these interference efforts. Multiple sources have also said that President Trump has ordered most of his administration and staff, with the notable exceptions, say other sources, of special forces, to exit the D.C. area and clear out for the holidays, suggesting that, as some sources put it, something big is about to go down. And as you're probably aware, folks, given that executive order from September of 2018, there are any number of national emergency scenarios that could be set to play out beginning any time now. And as Mike Adams' summary puts it for Natural News, Executive Order 13848 allows Trump's Treasury Department to seize any and all assets of any corporation or person who was engaged in supporting acts of foreign interference that targeted U.S. elections infrastructure or election results. And all of the big tech corporations, as well as left-wing media organizations, have certainly been complicit in aiding and abetting foreign interference in U.S. elections. John Ratcliffe knows that China was involved in that election theft, and he's about, suggests Adams, to unleash this fact upon the world, with huge ramifications for the ongoing allegations of widespread vote fraud and election rigging in the November 3rd abomination. Jack Posobiec quotes a national security official who told OANN that all of this is, quote, a big deal. Ratcliffe has drawn a line in the sand on China and is not backing down. Even some of the careers agree with him that the Russia, Russia, Russia crowd, and I'm quoting it precisely, is downplaying, to put it mildly, the China threat. And let me say this, folks, if you add in the national security threat of the biggest hack to government and military systems in U.S. history, you can see we're probably a whole lot closer to outright war than the waste-stream press even wants to remotely hint at. If you add in some of the increasingly strident warnings from people like retired military and L. Lynn Wood to hunker down and prepare for at least 10 days of genuine nastiness, you can kind of understand where this might be headed. The backdrop of the debate is increased concern about Chinese influence against U.S. lawmakers. In other words, there's a whole bunch of them, folks, that are clearly on the take. Not just some obvious California senators in the Biden crime family, but tons of others in Big Brother and Big Tech. As Eric Swalwell, doing the bang-bang with Fang Fang, could probably tell you, but won't. And even, as Lance D. Johnson reported Friday for Natural News, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who wants the rhinos to go ahead and cave to the communist-slash-Biden takeover and go along to get along, does seem to have taken quite a bit of money from Dominion voting system, lobbyists, and others associated with the election rigging scandal. Who could have thought it? The Epoch Times coverage of the story says that attorney Sidney Powell, who's filed a number of election-related lawsuits in multiple states, has said there is more than enough evidence to prompt Trump to use his 2018 executive order on foreign interference, saying it would give him a range of options. Quote, given the level of foreign interference we can demonstrate, and the country has evidence of in our filings of foreign interference in the election, it's more than sufficient to trigger the president's executive order from 2018 that gives him all kinds of power to do everything from seize assets to freeze things, demand the impoundment of the machines, she told the Epoch Times and its American Thought Leaders program. Under the emergency powers, he could even appoint a special prosecutor to look into this, which she said is exactly what needs to happen. But no, folks, it didn't happen this week. And, of course, it's been 4 years, but we haven't seen any orange jumpsuits yet either. And we'll be right back.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm still your host, Mark Call, and we're still talking about, ultimately, what boils down to a civil war at a minimum in the United States, and arguably a lot more than that. But let's start this second half of the show off at least a bit chronologically. To start things off, over last weekend, we had the SCOTUS basically copping out and saying, we don't care about the evidence, we're really scared, and so we're not going to hear anything. Like Texas v. Pennsylvania, even though we had original jurisdiction, back when we had a constitution too, and maybe even honest elections. By now you've heard about it. There's certainly a lot that could be said, but I really do think a tweet that came out on Thursday from attorney Lynn Wood may be the most succinct when he said, quote, this may be the most important tweet of my life. Chief Justice John Roberts is corrupt and should resign immediately. Justice Stephen Breyer should also resign immediately. They are anti-Trumpers dedicated to preventing the public from knowing the truth of the re-election of President Donald Trump. He also questioned whether or not Roberts had actually visited pedophile Jeffrey Epstein's infamous island, which is at least one of the potential explanations for why he's so eminently and obviously blackmailable. Noting that the mainstream media has certainly shown no interest in investigating the truth of whether it was the same John Roberts who was on the private jet flight logs, America, though, is now entitled, he says, to know the answer, because every lie will be revealed, after which he urged people to pray. And this next story fits here for obvious reasons. From a source deep inside the U.S. Supreme Court, says Hal Turner, as they discuss the pending lawsuit, when it was pending, against Pennsylvania et al. Hal, as you know, wrote the witness, I'm a clerk for one of the justices on SCOTUS. Today was like nothing we've ever seen. The justices, he said, are arguing loudly behind closed doors. They met in a closed and sealed room, as is standard. Usually it's very calm. However, today we could hear screaming all the way down the hall. They met in person because they didn't trust telephonic meeting as secure, and it was Chief Justice Roberts who was screaming. Quote, are you going to be responsible for the rioting if we hear this case? Don't tell me about Bush v. Gore. We weren't dealing with riots then. And then he went on to say, you're forgetting what your role is here, Neil, and I don't want to hear from the two junior justices any more. I will tell you how you will vote. The source also claimed that Clarence Thomas went on to say, quote, this is the end of democracy, John. And you regular listeners probably know what I'm thinking on that score. But it's true, whether tongue-in-cheek or not. And while all the justifiable hollering about the Supreme Court cop-out was in progress, the chairman of the Texas Republican Party, Alan West, raised a lot of eyebrows and even got a headline from the socialist UK Daily Mail for saying what a whole lot of people are no doubt thinking. Here's how their headline put it. Texas GOP chair calls for secession after SCOTUS rules against Trump. Well, of course, we know that they're not really high on the accuracy scale. The SCOTUS didn't rule, they just simply refused to rule, or even consider the facts. Here in full is what Alan West wrote on behalf of the Republican Party of Texas. The Supreme Court, in tossing the Texas lawsuit that was joined by 17 states and 106 U.S. congressmen, has decreed that a state can take unconstitutional actions and violate its own election law, resulting in damaging effects on other states that abide by the law, while the guilty state suffers no consequences. This decision establishes a precedent that says states can violate the U.S. Constitution and not be held accountable. This decision will have far-reaching ramifications for the future of our constitutional republic. And right there, folks, he shows he knows more about the Constitution than the whole stinking court. Perhaps, he concluded, and here is the statement that got all the press, perhaps law-abiding states should bond together and form a union of states that will abide by the Constitution. Unquote. He did add after that that the Texas GOP will always stand for the Constitution and for the rule of law, even while others don't. As always, it's important to follow the money, especially if that trail leads to civil war and or world war. So, the other big financial news of the week, or maybe lack thereof, came from the Federal Reserve's almighty meeting on Mount Olympus, where the FOMC decided to leave all of their policies unchanged and keep on keeping on with QE until, quote, substantial further progress is made. Said the Zero Hedge Summary, the headline hockey that was being played between the Fed flop, not delivering the QE twist that so many had been hoping for, but they did promise more will eventually come, and the constant optimistic headlines from Washington over, oh yes, you will take the jab and you will love it, COVID-1984 and the vaccine, left most major markets basically jonesing for more. But as a side note, says Tyler Durden, no one seemed to care that U.S. retail sales were a major miss. Home builder optimism rolled over, except they're building lots of multifamily dwellings. Guess what that means? And demand for gasoline continues to collapse in the U.S. Another story said that in addition to that return to forward guidance, where QE will stay at the mere $120 billion level until that substantial further progress has been made, they also announced the extension through September next year of the temporary dollar swap lines and repurchase facilities. Because the extension of these facilities will help sustain recent improvements, sick, in global U.S. dollar funding markets by serving as an important liquidity backstop. When Jay Powell took the podium wearing the ubiquitous muzzle, I wonder if the analysts there caught the symbolism. He was said to have treaded a fine line between wrecking the dollar's reputation, but reassuring the world that he'll always be there, don't worry your pretty little heads about it, to catch a dip. Suggesting to some that the Fed is saving their next QE twist until that double dip arrives. Here, by the way, is a bit of analysis your host thought was interesting, even if not necessarily cogent. The Fed is turning much more optimistic on the economy, says Zero Hedge, yet there's still not a hint of tightening. So expect many questions on this and no tangible answers in the days to come. Crucially, though, MKM Partners Michael Darda warned the following. Get this. If the neutral rate / velocity of money are rising, the Fed will be easing policy simply by standing still. In other words, by doing nothing, the Fed is actually doing something. And now you can see, folks, why some Austrians think this market is just plain insane. From there on, we go to some other economic news that suggests the Pollyanna pundits don't quite have it right. Here's one from Michael Snyder. What would the United States look like, he begins, if we lost half of all of our small businesses? I ask that because 48% of U.S. small businesses, according to a recent survey, this week's Alignable Q4 revenue poll, fear that they may be forced to shut down permanently soon. And that means before year end. And not even during the Great Depression in the 1930s did we see anything like this. Yeah, the big corporate giants will continue to expand their grip. They've got extremely deep pockets, and they can weather another round of lockdowns. Some may even be pushing for it. But for countless small businesses, what they're being exposed to next is literally a matter of life and death, with emphasis on the death part of that. How would you feel, asked Michael Snyder, if you spent years putting everything you had into your small business in order to try to make it successful, only to have politicians, oh, and maybe a few foreign invaders, come along and completely destroy it? And every time a small business has to let its workers go, it just makes the unemployment crisis in this country, about 850,000 or so last week, for example, even worse. Here's a related story, this time courtesy of Zero Hedge and the Alignable Rent Poll, which says it's becoming increasingly difficult for small businesses everywhere to pay their rent in full and on time, given the latest booga booga booga, alleged at least, COVID-1984 resurgences. Well, if not in the real stuff, at least in the case reporting. Here are some of the highlights. 61% of restaurants and 35% of all small businesses cannot pay their December rent. That's up 19% in the case of restaurants, up from 42% in November, and 3% in the case of small businesses. Rounding out the top three most affected are beauty salons at 46% and travel and hospitality businesses at 43%. But a whole lot of other small businesses are in big trouble. And looking at the demographics, says the story, minority-owned businesses are suffering the most. 49% of them reported they couldn't afford their rent for December. And that's 5% higher than in the last month. But there's more. In an interview with the International Man, Doug Casey was asked the following. Currently, there are over 18 million Americans behind on their mortgage and or rent payments, and that temporary suspension on evictions ends December 31st. What do you think will happen next? Well, said Casey, just as with the financial markets, the government has no alternative at this point, basically folks having painted themselves into a corner, but to do something, even if it's wrong. They will. They have to print more money to keep the rotten house of cards from completely collapsing on itself. Democrats have already said they want to increase the next stimulus to over $3 trillion. The oh-so-fiscally responsible rhinos have said, oh, no, well, we can print $1 trillion, but, eh, we don't think we want to go higher than that. And the fact that most of the last round of stimulus was either overtly wasted, went to cronies, or can't be accounted for is completely lost to the whole mess of them. They recognize, though, that unless they give out a lot of money directly or indirectly to the hoi polloi, there are going to be millions of them on the streets. He goes on to say that if Obama had made good on his ridiculous promises about shovel-ready projects, there'd be a lot more bridges, at least, for people to camp out under. But he didn't, so they've got a real problem on their hands. Millions of people have been living above their means and have no savings. At this point, if they let landlords and banks kick all of those people out, a number of things will happen. Residential property prices will collapse, millions of people will be scrambling for somewhere to live, and lots of banks and landlords, too, could go bust. Well, you know they're not going to let the banks go bust anyway. The longer the government kicks the can down the road, though, the bigger the inevitable bust will be. And how many times and for how long, folks, have we been seeing that and watching the bubble get ever bigger? And the state, said Doug Casey, isn't simply going to have to pay individuals and business owners that their idiotic policies have busted. They'll be subsidizing banks, landlords, and utility companies, too, because you can't live in a house or an apartment without water and electricity. And it's even worse because if you only cover the bare essentials, there's no money left over to pay for things like maintenance. So there'll be millions of buildings across the country suffering from deferred maintenance. Picture the South Bronx on steroids, or East St. Louis, Baltimore, being replicated all over the socialist big city cesspool left. And let's not forget the real estate taxes, too. Where will the daisy chain lead? Who knows? But one thing seems sure at this point. It's going to destroy the restaurant, retail, and travel industries all at once. And we're already seeing that. Back then to the early part of the week, and at least a bit of good news on the election front. Courtesy of, among others, Andrea Widberg at the American Thinker, something historic happened with America's electors on Monday. And note that, as far as I can tell, the waste stream is completely ignoring this one. Republicans, she begins, kind of have a reputation for being spineless. They don't make waves, they concede, they willingly negotiate, they back down, and if things get really bad, they become never-Trumpers. But sometimes they surprise us. On Monday, 7 states, in addition to having their apparently victorious Democrat electors cast their votes for president, also authorized Republican electors to cast their votes in order to make the record. It was wonderful, she said, even though Democrats believe they now have managed to completely steal the White House. But it ain't over yet. The Supreme Court currently appears to be a craven institution, she continues. Many think the court is sending a message saying that if Democrat Senate candidates win in Georgia, giving both the White House and Congress to the socialist left, it'll rubber stamp everything they do. In this way, the justices maybe hope to prevent the court packing that they've been threatened with that would diminish their prestige and cachet. Still, though, we might have a surprise in store. Additionally, more evidence keeps emerging about the massive voter fraud and election fraud. Remember, folks, voter fraud is how you do it at the local level, adding a few dead voters, subtracting a few Trump voters, and systemic election fraud is what you do with, say, Smartmatic and Dominion and other types of crooked voting machines to literally shift votes, add, subtract, multiply, and especially divide in order to find out how many votes you need to rig and flip in order to accomplish the programmed goal, and then help that happen via the other elements of systemic and local fraud. You know, like boxes and boxes of bogus ballots trucked in the wee hours of the morning. But back to the story here. She notes that affidavits signed under penalty of perjury from lots and lots of eyewitnesses and expert witnesses across America make an undeniable case to prove a massive amount of fraud. There's also that infamous video from Georgia, and there may be more to emerge. And finally, there's the redoubtable Sidney Powell, who has documentary evidence, she says, that votes were sent overseas and manipulated there, which could trigger Trump's 2018 executive order imposing sanctions for foreign interference in an election. And let's not forget, the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, is scheduled to issue his report on December 18th, this coming Friday. Now, whether or not we will be allowed to see it on or anywhere close to that date is certainly still TBD. But all you know for sure is that you won't be allowed to tweet about it or make a YouTube video. So with all of that hanging over their heads, to prepare for these possibilities, whether it's judicial courage or such overwhelming fraud that the election simply cannot stand, seven states did something unusual and admittedly perhaps even courageous. Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, and even New Mexico all selected two slates of electors. One accepts a Democrat victory, while the other anticipates a turnaround, whether it's judicial or because such overwhelming proof of fraud comes out that they need to save face, along with the possibility, of course, probability even, of foreign interference. In Michigan, she notes there was some extra drama because the state police attempted to block the Republican electors from entering the Capitol, but those efforts were foiled. And as history and indeed various legal precedents have shown, if states select different slates of electors, the House and the Senate can simply ignore one of those slates. However, if the House and Senate select different slates from those states, it's entirely unclear what happens next, especially since the Electoral Count Act, which cannot trump the Constitution, is a bit muddled. Under one of these scenarios that have been sketched out by various manipulators and people who are trying to avoid the manipulation, Vice President of the United States and therefore President of the Senate, Mike Pence, could throw out one or both sets of a state's electors. Another contemplates the House of Representatives could end up choosing between Biden and Trump. That's the one vote per state rule in the House. And since the Republicans actually have more states with Republican majorities, Trump would likely win that one. And, of course, there's a nightmare scenario in which the Speaker of the House, nutcase Nancy Pelosi herself, could become president, putting a number of communists in as vice president, and then step down, leaving the nation to its doom. Which is, come to think of it, the current default case anyway. It's part of the reason, folks, and I'm going to keep saying this, almost the worst thing I could imagine happening would be a civil war. Except, that is, for what we're already supposed to be getting if we don't have one. Which takes me back to enemies foreign and domestic, who, unless we get that civil war, may have already taken over the formerly free United States without even firing a shot. Why, even Vladimir Putin called to congratulate Comrade Biden for having pulled it off. And wouldn't you know it, the mainstream media finally loves Russia again. Well, when they're not being blamed for hacking everything except, of course, the election. This election. I guess it is kind of tough for them to keep all of their whoppers straight. Beyond, obviously, Orange Man bad, and, oh yeah, Senile Man very, very good. So yeah, I tried to listen to some of the Fuhrer-elect speech earlier in the week, or at least as much as I could stand of him trying to read a teleprompter without drooling.
Come on, man!
So I do need to get this out of the way up front. First, the obvious apology for doing it, and the admission. I've listened to some pretty nasty historic speeches over the years. From recordings of Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Nikita Khrushchev, to Fidel Castro and various American wannabe tyrants. Not just William Jefferson, Blythe Clinton, and Mr. New World Order himself, George Herbert Walker Bush I, and Barry Sobarko, a.k.a. Barry Sotero, Barack Hussein Obama, and a whole bunch of other absolutely lying through their teeth scumbags. But that exercise in the Hitlerian big lie on Monday may really have taken the cake. Give me a John Gotti or even an Al Capone talking about their Christian faith and calling for unity any day. At least they weren't trying to hide who they really were. The closest thing I saw to an objective summary came from Zero Hedge, which wrote that Joe Biden lashed out at President Trump on Monday night, saying in a 14-minute speech following his win in the Electoral College that Trump's ongoing challenges to the 2020 election are, quote, an unprecedented assault on our democracy, unquote, and of course sick, and that claims of widespread fraud are baseless, despite the fact that the Supreme Court elected not to even review the merits of various cases. And yeah, folks, he lied about that, too. What I'm going to do next is play just a few, and I promise you it'll be just a very few clips from the benefactor of the greatest criminal fraud in American history so far. And the one thing I can guarantee you I won't do is keep silent while this guy piles whopper upon whopper. Let's start here with this snippet, which, when I first heard it, I thought may be one of the most disgusting things I've ever heard a lying scumbag say in my lifetime.
In America, when questions are raised about the legitimacy of any election, those questions are resolved through the legal processes. And that's precisely what happened here.
We shut them all down, legally. We silenced them all, legally. We made sure that you couldn't even talk about it on Twitter or to Facebook, much less see videos of the evidence on YouTube, legally. Ha! Most of you still don't even know about my son Hunter's criminality, even though all of it was right there on the laptop, which most of you don't think even exists. Ha! Aren't we good at what we do? Thank you, CNN, New York Times, and of course FBI and Bill Barr. And the whoppers just kept on coming.
If anyone didn't know before, they know now.
My criminal organization runs this country. Well, that's what he should have said. That's probably what he was thinking, but that's not what he did say.
If anyone didn't know before, they know now. What beats deep in the hearts of the American people is this: democracy. The right to be heard.
Except on YouTube, unless you're politically correct enough.
To have your vote counted.
If you vote right, maybe even dozens of times.
To choose leaders of this nation to govern ourselves.
However our Chinese overlords allow us to be governed.
In America, politicians don't take power. People grant power to them.
They do, folks, by sitting still for the biggest fraud and outright theft in American history. And now they're rubbing your noses in it.
The flame of democracy was lit in this nation a long time ago. And we now know nothing, not even a pandemic or an abuse of power, can extinguish that flame.
But I am going to muzzle you, strap you down and vaccinate you, and of course take your firearms so you won't be able to say no to anything that I intend to do thereafter. One more clip, just to make the point about how they're trying to rub the American people's noses in what they've managed to get away with right before their eyes.
Thankfully, a unanimous Supreme Court immediately and completely rejected this effort. The court sent a clear signal to President Trump that they would be no part of an unprecedented assault on our democracy. Every single avenue was made available to President Trump to contest the results. He took full advantage of each and every one of those avenues.
Even if we own the judges, the election clerks, and shut down all of his speeches on TV. Wouldn't even let him tweet about it without the disclaimer. Ha ha!
President Trump was denied no course of action he wanted to take. He took his case to Republican governors and Republican Secretary of State, as he criticized many of them, to Republican state legislatures, to Republican-appointed judges at every level.
Which proves only what all of us have known for a long time. The rhinos are not your friends. Nor can most of them be trusted to take their oaths of office any more seriously than the outright communists.
And in a case decided after the Supreme Court's latest rejection, a judge appointed by President Trump wrote, quote, "This court has allowed the plaintiff the chance to make his case, and he has lost on the merits." End of quote. Lost on the merits. Even President Trump's own cybersecurity chief, overseeing our elections, said it was the most secure election in American history. And summarily was let go. Let me say it again. His own cybersecurity chief, overseeing this election, said it was the most secure in American history.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
You know, respecting the will of the people is at the heart of our democracy, even when we find those results hard to accept. But that's the obligation of those who have taken on a sworn duty to uphold the Constitution.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. Well, I ain't got a witness, and I can't prove it. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And that, folks, may be the single most disgusting, in-your-face whopper I've ever had to report on.
You know, respecting the will of the people is at the heart of our democracy, even when we find those results hard to accept.
Downright statistically impossible and completely unbelievable, in fact.
But that's the obligation of those who've taken on a sworn duty to uphold the Constitution.
So why has he already promised, before he's even put his hand on a Bible and lied again, to take away every part that still remains of your Bill of Rights? So I'm going to wrap up the show tonight by making one very, well, even deadly serious suggestion, folks. Biden's a CCP puppet, we know it. He despises the Constitution, especially the Second Amendment, and has already promised that any oath he takes is absolutely worthless. Why is he going to insult us by putting his hand on a Bible when he does it? They've done away with election integrity, with the Constitution. Why not do away with the oath, too, and let's just get on with it?